One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today. And get your old self back naturally.
I made banana muffins.
How are they? Did I tell you what happened on Friday?
You told me, but you need to tell everybody else.
Ugh. On Friday night, we put our kids to bed and we were watching a movie, and then Koa sometimes sleepwalks and talks, and we heard him yelling, "I have to do it! I can do it!" Like at the top of the stairs.
Wait, you didn't tell me this.
What? Oh, God. It was so crazy. So we're like, oh, Koa's sleepwalking. We go upstairs. And we're like, "You're okay, buddy?" And he's like, "I have to pee." But he's like still asleep. So we like brought him into the bathroom. And Matt's like, "His back's wet." I'm like, "What's on his back?" And he's like, "Oh, no. Barf. But how, why is it all over his back?"
No.
We were like, "What?" And then we went in the bedroom and like Griffin had thrown up all over Koa. Koa had gotten up and sleptwalked covered in barf. It's like a nightmare.
I mean, it's your living life. You've had like 2 weeks of bodily functions of your children that it just is. It's a lot.
It never ceases.
Will wonders never cease? Will wonders never cease? It's not my best. Listen, it's not my best banana muffin. It's not as banana-y as I like. It's pretty light. Mm-hmm. So it feels like a cake.
It's nice.
But it's good. What's fun is I get to text my neighbor and be like, do you want a freshly baked banana muffin? Because I can't.
Let them eat cake. Let them eat cake.
It's nice.
You know?
It's nice. It feels good to be like, I don't want to hoard these by myself because I want to bake, but like I can't eat it all.
Yeah. I let Griffin make, you saw his sugar cookies that he sprinkled by individually placing sprinkles on them. It took like an hour. It was so cute. He was like, 1, 2, and then he'd go, "I'm going to do some verde y azul." So cute. So
really cute.
Really cute.
The best is we were leaving downstairs. I was leaving with Adam and Spen when you were putting the kids to bed. And I think it was one of them that just nabbed a cookie and ate it.
Spen, without a doubt.
I don't think it was. I think it was Adam.
No, really? Adam's always trying to run away from desserts. Oh, that's amazing. He's usually, sometimes when I bring dessert, he yells at me. Like, I'm like this evil temptress.
You are. You are the siren of treats.
Yes.
The funny thing is what I loved about it is, like, you actually want people to take sweet treats from your kids.
Oh, yeah, of course. They have enough sweet treats.
Take them.
You know, Griffin's, you know, enough? On repeat asking me for a treat. He wakes up and the first thing out of his mouth is, "Can I have a treat?" And I have to be like, "No." Like, what?
It was really funny. There was this moment though the other night after seeing the most incredible performances. We haven't talked to them about
Zumba
it.
Was amazing.
You guys, I felt so much joy and laughter at this school recital, and some of
y'all at the beginning of the recital they announced what the programming was and Carrie started crying.
I was tearing up because I felt so proud of them, and it was so sweet, and like the kids were so proud. And I think also walking in and seeing Koa see you guys And like his face lit up in this like just adorable way. And then also seeing him and the rest of his class like cheering for everybody else, like it just felt so cool. And so some of the performances we saw, we obviously saw two different levels of Zumba because we had the second and third graders and we had the third and fourth graders. We also saw a kindergarten dance class. We saw bell choir. We saw
the movie.
Well, that was going to be my last because we had a guitar and choir sing.
Oh, right. That was really
Umbrella
good.
And Roar from
that was
by
so
Katy Perry. What was amazing about it is when it got super high, I think the instructor just said, "Scream it!"
Just be and loud.
So out of nowhere, it'd be like little kids singing, and then screaming. Loud.
I loved
and
that.
I loved it. And the parents were so proud of their kids; it was very sweet. And then the movie. There was a movie. It was a short film, and it was so good
that we wish it was a long film.
I wish it was a long film. I think this is going to be a good sort of like spec for producers to get interested and to buy into it. But what was great about it is you had these like 10-year-olds that like were just talking about existential dread. And it was so great because it was like the premise was is you have a 5-minute timers going off and then they're
freaking
out.
You don't know what it's counting down to.
You don't know what it's counting down to.
They're like, we have 3 minutes left, but we don't know what's going to happen.
You don't know what has happened. And one of the things was just like images on a computer. And they said, what's going to happen in 4 minutes? And then the response was, you will find out in 3 minutes. 3-minute timer started. Like they kept jumping minutes. It was so great. And then at the end, it was just cookies. And that was it.
Spoiler alert,
sorry.
Carrie.
I mean, I just don't know if it's going to have like wide
I mean, it's probably on the Wikipedia page, but
it's. But like at one point, a kid was like, maybe what happens is after 5 minutes, we find out that life is not worth living and that all we've done is a societal construct. And it was and it was so wild because you're like, this is written by 10-year-olds. And maybe
they're feeling the weight of the world.
Maybe we're Brooklyning too hard. Maybe the weight of the world of New York City is on these kids' shoulders. And maybe we could do a better job of like maybe relieving that pain, but it was really cute and I loved it. And Koa went to karate, Quinn went to fish air, Griffin watched TV while I worked, which is kind of like his dream, frankly.
Everybody
was living their dream. It was great. No notes.
And then I came home and Matt, Carrie, Spencer, Adam, Koa, Griff, all sitting around playing Uno, all wearing barrettes.
And the Brettes were really cute.
You guys
it was amazing.
Cute.
Like to play Uno with Koa. And what was really great, I have to give Koa a shout out, is I play to win. That's the thing about me is when I play to win and I strategize and I try my best to do a good job. And I did win, just so that we're aware. I did win. But
Did you?
I did. Thank you. And the best was that Koa could have gotten really mad at me. Koa could have gotten upset. Koa could have been like, Carrie. Because he's competitive and he's a kid, right? Kids don't like to lose. That's just a thing. Yeah. And as much as he was like he was railing against it, he was like, Carrie, no.
He finally figured out that it was like just fun to play. And it's just he has not had that experience that often. He's been too wrapped up in anxiety of losing and like how that will feel. And he did such a good job, I thought. Matt and I had a whole conversation about where we're like, whoa, Cole really like handled Uno like a man tonight.
He did.
Or like
he
a woman.
Like, we laughed. Like Adam and I were joking about teaming up. He and Spen were joking about teaming up. And we just were having fun. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't, you know, like, again, kids can be hard. You know, kids can feel the pain
kids
of losing really
strongly.
They can throw
up on you in the middle of the night. You never know.
But Koa, I thought, was such a star. And it was really cool. I was really proud of him. He like just handled my competitive streak like a champ, which I really appreciated. Mm-hmm. So I just have to give him a shout out for that because that was cool.
Shout out to
Koa. It was really fun to play with him.
So I went to that play last night.
Oh, yeah. How did it go? What did you think?
It was cool, you know. It's a cool thing because it's called Death of Rasputin. And you go to Manhattan and hop on this ferry Thus, your experience begins, and everyone going to the play is instructed to wear black. And a lot of people are dressed up. So it's like a lot of people in black leather and like black tulle. And like, it was just like, yeah, it was very cool. It was like all of us get on a ferry, which is included in the cost of the ticket, and then ride to the island, which is like a very mellow 10-minute ride. Hop off, and you go into this gorgeous space that they don't let you bring your phone into. Or I think they let you bring your phone, but they're like, no pictures. And they say, some things are meant to be
experienced, not recorded.
Experienced and not captured.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. And they were like, to like be in the moment, keep this fluid, don't do it. And so like, I didn't even bring my phone in, went into this room that was like gorgeous. It's like a two-floor warehouse that they've totally turned into an immersive space that has a lot of different rooms to walk through and characters to observe. And unlike Life and Trust, unlike Sleep No More, it's not movement-based. There's a bunch of movement, totally true, and everyone in the show is a trained dancer, you can tell, but they're actors before dancers, a lot of them, or I don't know if they'd consider themselves to be actors before dancers, but they are both, and it's scripted. So the idea is that you can walk through and witness all these vignettes and these scenes, and some of them are very densely choreographed, and a lot of stuff happens, and some of them are more like feeling moments or that you're alone with a character. And there's a really high incidence of participation. So you might be in a space where a character is like, I really need your help. And they're going to ask everybody that's with them at that time. There's maybe like 10 actors. So you can travel wherever you want. You can walk out of a scene whenever you want to go check out a different one. And everyone, as a result, at the end, I went with two people. We had three completely different experiences where I'm like, what did you see? And like, I was like, what about the room that's all white and covered in silk? And Jamie was like, what room? And I was like, trying to explain where it was. He's like, I never saw that room. And that's at one point, I like went in this tiny hallway that just one person can fit in that was kind of tucked behind an elevator that you could tell probably a lot of people didn't see. And it had some cool stuff like hanging. And then I was like, what is this? And it looked almost like a grate in the wall that you could watch something through. And I'm looking through it and I can see people in a room, but I can tell they can't see me. And then I accidentally pushed on it and it opened. And then it was kind of small, but I decided to step through it and everyone in the room turned and gasped. And I realized I was climbing through a grandfather clock that they thought was a clock in the room. So it was like a lot of things that were just like, what is happening? And you don't wear masks and the characters talk to you. And if they talk to you, you're allowed to talk back. So it's not like a wild din of people just like participating however they want. It's still organized. But there were some scenes where like a character would really engage the people that they were with and it would turn into like almost a comedy. They didn't take itself like too seriously. Some of the dances are like just wild and fun and they get you to participate and you're clapping and it's got like a body sort of we're in a bar sense about it. I don't know. It was so full of life. And I can see why people would go back and want to explore it again and see a different track, because there's my only note that I always have for these kinds of shows is I feel very overpowered by my sense of FOMO. In every decision I make, I know I'm missing something else. So that was like a challenge, but I just thought it was so cool. Like at the end was really funny. It ends. And it has a really great big scene they make sure everybody sees that kind of puts a button on it. And then you get taken down to a different bar that it ends in. And the cast all comes out in their street clothes and is hanging out at the bar. And then at one point, two of them grab a microphone and are like, so we're going to teach you guys a phrase from the show. And we'll give you some background as to like how we all learned the phrase and how it works. And then they spend time teaching and they're like, it's kind of... we're going to teach it to you and then we're going to have a contest. If you want to stay, stay. There's like a 9:30 ferry, a 10 ferry, a 10:30 ferry. So you can leave. You can go to the bar and buy pierogies or drinks. And like people are, so they teach pierogies. This dance.
You had me at pierogies.
I bought pierogies.
Why wouldn't
you? So they
you?
Teach you this dance. And Jamie's our friend that is an old man and he was there. Come on, Jamie's an old man.
He's older than me, but I think he's always been an old man. I think he was 20 and he was an old man. I think
totally.
That's what,
and yeah. He was like, yeah, I want to learn to dance. I want to do, he goes, come on, something different. And I was like, okay. So he's like, we were like, should we get on the ferry? And he's like, no, I want to learn this dance. And Rebecca and I were like, okay. So we stay. And then he starts learning the dance. I'm kind of learning it, but I'm like leaving to go buy pierogies. I'm not paying attention. Yeah. And then they start kicking people out. Like being like, now it's narrowed down to this people. Now it's narrowed down. And Rebecca and I are like, oh my God, our ferry leaves in 5 minutes. And I'm like, should I get Jamie? And then we turn and it just got narrowed down to Jamie and one girl. And he's like in the final dance recital. And I'm like, oh my God, we're going to miss this ferry.
We have to.
And then he loses to the girl in the final round. And then we're all applauding and we grab him and we're like, Jamie, are you ready to run? We like run out of the building and get on the 10 o'clock ferry. So it was perfect. It was really, Jamie had never been to Governor's Island. So it was just a really cool night. It was really fun.
Oh, and I love that. Do you feel like, can I ask, what was better, the night with the people or the show?
Oh, well, they're inextricably linked.
Yeah. I'm feeling like you had more fun with your friends than you did at the show.
I had a really great time at the show. It was so different. I'd never experienced. Yeah, but it's more like bonding with people because you just did this really unique thing. It's like if you go rock climbing with your friends and you're like, what was better, the rock climbing or the friends? You're like, no, it was fun that we did the thing together. Like,
yeah, that's true. Okay.
It's, yep, you know what I mean? Sense. Yeah.
Totally. But 100%. It was great. Oh, Quinn. I love that. That's
it was just
fun.
An unusual evening. And I was home and in bed at 11. And I love that as well.
Wait, that's such a quick travel.
Because 10 o'clock ferry gets back at like 10:10. I jumped on an R. It was so fast. Like I was home by 11 in bed.
That's crazy.
I was in pajamas at 11. I was like, this
that's nuts. Okay,
yeah, it felt
that's
really
ideal.
Good. Ideal. Great night. And
great night.
Happy to have been
sorry
there.
To make it.
Oh, speaking of great things, Larry sent some, you know, Larry sends us notes on every episode.
Yes, my favorite.
And he sent some notes on the last one. It was kind of a long email. I'm not going to read it to you. But my favorite note that he gave was he wrote, hey, by the way, when Carrie says the chef was never heard from again and you asked her to clarify, you mean ever? That is the meaning of never heard from again. So that was a note for me.
God, I love that. Did he have a note for me in that episode?
He did not. I mean, he's just, you know, he liked our stories. He didn't. If he has a note for you, I'll send it to you. Listen, got to pay attention.
Yeah, I love the feedback. And that his are the only comments I want to hear and see and know. Okay, by the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily. I'm Carrie Obama, and
I'm
Quinlan Posner.
What's that from? What TV show went, whoa? Oh, Home Improvement. Something like that. Remember?
God, yeah. That.
It's really a
Tim
callback.
Allen. Tim Allen, I don't know where he sits in my brain at the moment.
What's his story? He's the Santa Claus, and then what's...
He's the Santa Claus?
He feels
Claus?
Like he could be...
He is also the voice of Michigan, so I like that is comforting.
And Buzz Lightyear.
And Buzz Lightyear. So there's like a lot of things. There's a lot of canon. What I love about the Santa Claus, because I do love that movie, The Santa Claus. I really like that film.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite Christmas movies.
Yeah, no.
I would say top 10 Christmas movies for me. Maybe not top 5,
to
but
watch
definitely
that
top 10.
This year with Koa.
Oh, that's going to be
so
fun.
There's so many
to watch
Christmas movies he hasn't seen.
Ugh, I want to be there for any and all of them. Is that... Apparently, when the film, it was like the first time Tim Allen did a film. And so he was sent the script, and apparently it was before Disney got their hands on it. And I guess it became a little bit of like a NIMBY moment where Tim Allen's character shoots Santa.
Whoa. Rough.
Disney was like, no, we can't have that. But I guess in the song, it's like he thinks there's an intruder and he shoots him.
I love that. It's so
funny. So I like the lore of the Santa Claus art. Obviously, I prefer the edits that they made. It's a little more fantastical and Disneyfied. But I think Tim Allen was like, loved the hard-hitting nature of like a not in my backyard homeowner owning a gun, which is maybe why I assume he's a big gun guy. Okay, anyway, it's my turn to tell a story. But first, maybe a word from our sponsors, if we have any?
We should do that sometimes.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Quinn is moving.
I'm back. I also want to apologize. I know that sometimes when I do these episodes, sitting in this position and then I go at it, I realize what a mess I've made. It's too late. But I am going to, in the future, I'll occasionally try to go back to using the desk. Today, I had a quick change. So here we are.
Quick change. And we have to leave in 45 minutes because I have a meeting with an accountant with my name on it.
Okay.
And now I'm not talking about Ben Affleck in the film, The Accountant. No.
Thanks
oh my God,
clarifying.
I had a dream about Ben Affleck and Matt Damon last night. Oh my God. Sorry. I just jogged my own memory.
Yeah,
I had a dream.
Fun.
It was a very Goodwill Hunting moment, but apparently what it was, this is weird. I haven't said this to anyone yet. I was in an Irish bar and I was wearing a low cut top and I felt really empowered and I went up to Ben Affleck in the hopes of talking to Matt Damon and be like, buy me a drink. And then I remember sitting at a bar and they were at the other end and I pretended to be aloof and not look at them.
That'll
which is
always
my
work.
Which, by the way, is always my tactic. If I have a crush on you, guess who's not talking to you? Me.
Smart.
So anyway, so smart. Don't engage anyone. What could possibly go wrong?
Ever.
So it's probably, let's be real, safest. So I remember they ordered me a drink and I think I felt guilty because the server was like, it's a $70 drink. And in my dream, they were Goodwill Hunting.
$70 drink.
They were Goodwill Hunting. So I was like, oh no, these poor people, like I'm not going to put out. And they're spending $70 on a drink for me. And I got stressed in my dream about how much money they were spending and that there was going to be an expectation of me. And then they left and I was sitting next to two old surly people at this bar drinking a huge like pint, a big stein of this mixed drink, which turned out to be like half Guinness, half cider, you know, the whole snake bite.
Delicious.
Anyway, so that was the dream. It didn't end happily with me, Ben or Matt, but it was kind of a fun hang we had.
Really sorry to hear
for a brief moment in my dream. And that's my story. So it's your turn.
It's my turn.
Okay, I got this information from Wikipedia, People, CNN, New York Times, and Reddit. It's November 8th, 2024. So pretty recently. I was probably at your house during this. Or no, I was on the road with Wheel of Fortune Life. And 30-year-old Hannah Kobayashi is traveling from Maui to New York City. And the whole point of her traveling to New York City is to visit family. Apparently, she wants to spend time with her aunt who lives upstate in New York. She also planned to photograph a musician's show in Brooklyn on November 13th. And we know that because the musician's manager says that she reached out to him and was like, I'd like a press pass. And so he gave it to her for the show. Interestingly enough, she's on the plane with her ex-boyfriend. They're on the same flight. And the reason is because they booked the flight at the same time, but they broke up. And then instead of, you know, losing that flight, they were like, okay, we'll take this flight together and then we'll go our separate ways. Because who doesn't want to use an unrefundable ticket? So the flight goes from Maui to LAX and then LAX to New York City. And when the LAX to New York City leg of the trip took off, Hannah Kobayashi was not on her flight. At this point, she's still in communication with her family, and her family doesn't know that she's not landed in New York City. And so what we do know now when we reconstruct her whereabouts, we see that between November 8th, from when the flight landed in LAX, to the 11th, there is footage of her around LA. She's at the mall. She's at the Nike store. We have evidence that she is in LA for those 3 days. We also see from her online activity that she has sent 2 Venmo payments to 2 people that her family does not recognize. On November 10th, so a couple days after she landed, her mom texts her asking if she made it to New York. The reports say she responded in the negative, which I assume she said no, although I don't have a direct quote. There is evidence also of her during this time texting her sister and her aunt and some friends. She texts them that her ID was stolen and she's communicating that she's worried about someone she thought she loved who was trying to take her money. Her sister receives a text that says this. It says, deep hackers wiped my identity, stole all my funds, and have had me on a mindfuck since Friday. Another message. I got tricked pretty much into giving away all my funds for someone I thought I loved. Her aunt then receives a text message, and she sends her aunt this text. She mentioned feeling scared and that someone might be trying to steal her money and identity, so very similar to what she sent her sister. And then she also said strange cryptic messages, things about the Matrix. Her aunt said, it's so unlike her. And then all of a sudden, no more communication. They couldn't get a hold of her. They didn't know where she was. And so obviously, this family is incredibly worried. So it's November 11th. Is the last time they communicated with her. And we are able to see that there is surveillance footage of her with an unknown person at a downtown Los Angeles metro rail station. Her family is really worried, so they fly to LA to assist in looking for her. Her dad flies in. November 15th, the LAPD releases a missing persons poster. It is confusing because she does miss this leg of the trip. Her bag was checked from Maui to New York. And while she's in LA, she calls the airline and she's like, hey, my bag went to New York. I'm not there. I'm in LA. Can you send it back? And so we also have footage of her going to the carousel on November 11th and getting her bags from the flight that was sent back. Her dad on November 18th is speaking to news outlets, trying to find his daughter, trying to get the information out, trying to get her name out and word about her situation. And he says, I miss her. I just want her to know that and just want her to reach out. Anything. He also said to a news station, Hannah loved to travel. She loved photography, art, music, and I wasn't too close with her growing up. We haven't had contact for a while. I'm just trying to make up. I'm trying to get her back. That's my main focus. So there's obviously some questioning of what their relationship is, but it seems like her whole family is legs on the ground trying to find Hannah and make sure she's safe, make sure she's okay after these suspicious text messages, after her just stopping all communication with them. November 24th, 2024, Ryan Kobayashi, her father, he is found dead in a parking lot near LAX.
What? This the is cause of death really crazy.
Is suicide. This is triggering, so please, but he jumped from a parking structure and the cause of death is multiple blunt force trauma injuries that caused his death. Mm-hmm. What the family starts to say is they believe his mental health deteriorated as he searched for his daughter. The news of his death is released by a nonprofit that was helping search for Hannah. And they said after his death, Hannah is still actively missing and is believed to be in imminent danger. So a lot has happened in a very short amount of time. And obviously the sudden death of her father is shocking in this search. Mm-hmm. About a week later, December 2nd, 2024, the police announce a couple of findings. They find that there is video footage of Hannah taken by the U.S. Customs and Border Protection showing her crossing from the U.S. into Tijuana, Mexico, on foot, unharmed, with her bags, the ones that she got from LAX, on November 12th. She was alone, she had her luggage, and she's unharmed. After this, the LAPD has very little else to do because they believe that her status is going from a missing person to a voluntary missing person. So they start announcing, hey, Hannah, we urge you to call your family, but the LAPD has now ruled out trafficking, foul play, and they are opting not to go search for her in Mexico. They're not going to put an extradition order. They're not going to make the government find her and bring her back. They said someone mentioned early on that Hannah had talked about wanting to, quote, unplug from modern technology. And so the LAPD says she has a right to her privacy and we respect her choice. So just to put a finer point on the timeline of this, she crossed into Mexico November 12th. Her father killed himself on the 24th. There's been absolute radio silence. Then in December, it is also investigated and released that Hannah might have been involved in a green card marriage scam, that she planned or was going to or did marry an Argentinian man named Alana Casace. I'm sure I'm not saying that name correctly. Her mom found documentation in her home in Hawaii and immigration paperwork and contacts with an immigration lawyer. And so she turned that over to the FBI and LAPD while they were trying to search just to get more information. Hannah, her ex-boyfriend, if you recall, who she was going to New York with, apparently she was dating this guy. And I don't know if it's the same guy. It looks like it's the same guy, but because some of this I found on Reddit. Hannah was dating this guy who apparently was also going to marry another immigrant, right? And so it is believed that the two that she and her ex-boyfriend were going to marry were a couple, and that the four of them were working together so that the two of them could get their green card marriage. And apparently the reason she was going to New York City in the first place was to visit her family, yes, but also because she needed to take pictures with the couple she was involved with to make the marriage look more legit, to get some pictures to show immigration to prove the veracity of the relationship. On December 11th, so a little over like a month since she went missing, a month to the day, the LAPD reports that she was found alive. December 16th, she returns to the U.S. on her own, and she makes a statement shortly after she comes back to the States. The statement is as follows. At daybreak on December 15th, I crossed the border back into the United States. My focus now is on my healing, my peace, and my creativity. I am deeply grateful to my family and everyone who has shown me kindness and compassion during this time. I was unaware of everything that was happening in the media while I was away, and I am still processing it all. I kindly ask for respect for myself, my family, and my loved ones as I navigate through this challenging time. Thank you for your understanding. She did not go to her father's funeral. And when someone wrote on her Instagram about this, she wrote, "You don't know the whole story. My intention in this post is to acknowledge that I'm going to speak about my experience and to stand up against all the hate that was cast upon me. I hope that in your darkest hours, you are shown compassion and love versus hate and judgment." So this leaves a lot of questioning, and the internet is going to do what the internet's going to do, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to try to fill in the blanks of what happened. So all I can tell you are some Reddit theories. But the information that I shared with you is pretty much all we have from news reports. So some people on Reddit believe that this was all a sham, that she was going to get in trouble for this green card marriage. And so her family was worried about how much trouble she was going to get in. And so she planned her own escape or missing persons situation. And because she needed a cover up, the family, someone wrote this on Reddit. The family is aware of the trip, sham marriages, green card scheme, but keeps it going because now they're getting donations and support. Estranged dad shows up and he kills himself because he found out it was a sham and was embarrassed or thought it pointed to her being trafficked. Unsure if the Hawaiian side of the family let him know what they knew before he took his life. After being tracked down, Hannah and family give incredibly vague, what a wild time, need space for healing statement so that people don't dig into her friends, her family, or their quote spouses. So there's a lot of the theory that they have is that this was all orchestrated to cover up the green card marriage. Mm-hmm. I think that's a bit of a leap. I don't think her family coming, I don't know how far a family would go for this type of cover up. But to get the police involved and all of that stuff. But after the last part, which is obviously someone's theory, mm-hmm. the rest is all we have to go on. And so this just happened. We don't know much of information. Her dad did freely admit to having an estranged relationship with his daughter and showed up to look for her. The timing of his death is really, really wild. In the chronology of this case, and her statement when she comes back about wanting to focus on her healing and peace is fine, but to also say, and my creativity, feels a little like, what is going on? And for her to say she didn't have any understanding about what was happening in the media during this time, she left her family, she left everyone on red, and just trusted no one, I guess, would go look for her, which mm-hmm. is also an unkind thing to do. But I think it seems like maybe she had a mental break, left, and came back of her own accord when she was ready. And maybe she came back into this mess of what everything was. I don't know. But it's a very suspicious case. What do you think?
What do I think of the case? I think that I don't know what to think. I would have to do my own online digging to believe in any sort of theory about this green card. I want to know more about the what kind of proof we have of that.
Yeah. I mean, what we have is a news report of her mom giving over documentation to the police, being like, we think she's involved in this green card marriage. But again, like, it does feel like a really big leap to be like, hey, oh no, I might be involved in a green card marriage. And instead of just not going through with it, like, kidnapping yourself feels, and then your family being like, yes, that's a great idea.
Yeah, it definitely could have happened. I don't know. I'm just like,
her dad dying is super.
Her dad dying is the part that feels really upsetting to me, and I do wonder, especially because they didn't have a very good relationship, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So yeah, what I think that's a big question, like what happened there. But very sad either way. It's just, I wonder if that sounds like such a mental health issue that it's hard to read in because it could have nothing to do with this in a lot of ways. It could be the straw that broke the camel's back, you know?
Totally. I think people also extreme. On Reddit were comparing her, I think, to Sherry Papini in like staging her own missing persons case.
Doesn't sound like that's at all what happened.
It doesn't feel the same. Did you see that they're coming out with a new Sherry Papini? Where it's like they're going to interview Sherry. I can't wait.
Oh my God. She is a wild card. all right.
Anyway. There's Hannah Kobayashi.
I got this information from LA Times, Oxygen, and a show called The Killer Beside Me. We are in 1988, Orange County, and Janet has a son, Eric. He's 16. She's a really good mom, super into being a mom. She gets elected to the school board in Southern Orange County where they live, and she's just like a really active member of the community. that's very popular. People love her. Her husband, Richard, is more quiet. They've been together almost 20 years. And he's a college lecturer. He's a business consultant. He has a PhD in psychology. He's a mathematician, super smart guy. And she only graduated high school. So on the show, they talk about how maybe he has a little bit of a superiority thing with her. He's also quiet and withdrawn, and she's very outgoing and gregarious. And so they don't match. And she knows they don't match. She's having an affair with a guy that works with the school district. And they've been having the affair for 7 years. So it's pretty serious. It feels like it could be her son's 16. She cares a lot about him and about the family. So I wonder if she was waiting. He had only one more year of high school. So I wonder if she was like, let's keep it together. And then when you go, maybe I'll move on. She has an ulcer and she takes meds for that. And I get the feeling that it could be like the stress of holding all of this together a little bit and having such a big secret. Generally speaking, even though she's taking meds for this ulcer, she keeps getting sicker and feeling crappier and staying at home and being in bed and just feeling generally really unwell. And it's been over 2 weeks and she's barely been able to leave the house, but she does manage to do the one thing she loves, being part of the school board. She takes it really seriously. So she'll push herself to get out of bed, put on a Luke, throw on some eyeliner and lip gloss, and get to these meetings. And she has some anxiety because some of the stuff she's pushing for is really progressive, like sex education. And she knows that in her community, not everyone is for that. There's a lot of outspoken conservative people that view her as the enemy, and she is going to stay strong and push for what she wants. So that's part of why she continues to show up at these meetings. And she shows up at one, and the people at the meeting confront her with photographs of her with this guy that she's having the affair with, that's part of the school board. And the photographs are like in flyer format. So it's a black and white photo of her and him. And then it says on it something, I don't know what it says exactly. It says something along the lines of, do we trust this woman with our kids? And
what?
She's horrified. She's super embarrassed. She goes home and her husband, Richard, has seen the flyer and is pissed and is embarrassed. And so they are dealing with this and it's putting extra strain on their marriage. And meanwhile, her health continues to deteriorate. She's dehydrated and lesions are popping up all over her body. And again, you could reason this is even more stressful that this is happening mm-hmm. with the school board, with her marriage. But she's in so much pain, she can barely wear clothes. It hurts to wear clothing. She'll go to the hospital for this. And they'll treat her. They don't know what's wrong with her. But when she's in the hospital and she's able to rest and be there a few days, she improves greatly. And then she goes home and it starts up again. Despite the fact that their marriage is in a really strained place, Richard, by all appearances, is very worried about her and taking care of her. But then she starts going through his stuff one day when he's out for something she needs. And she finds a stack of those flyers and realizes he's the one that made them.
Mm-hmm. We all knew this was happening. We all knew
so
that was going.
She's like, you're the OG creator. You hate my guts. And it is shortly after that, on January 24th, that she and Eric are headed to go whale watching. They're in the driveway and she just collapses. They call 911. She's put in an ambulance and her son Eric and her husband Richard follow her in the ambulance, but she's pronounced dead at the hospital. They do an autopsy on her. They don't have a cause of death. So the police know about what I told you with the school board, that she has a lot of enemies, that she was trying to put forth a lot of progressive ideas that people didn't like. They wonder if someone had it in for her. they hadn't heard about the flyer. What they will eventually hear from friends is, oh, the flyer was something actually her husband made. They know about the affair, of course, because of the flyer. So they're talking to this man that she had slept with. And they're trying to figure out who could have done this and what did they even do? Like, why is she dead? We can't figure out why Janet's dead. 6 months go by and they're no closer. And they get just a random woman coming in saying, I want to talk to you about this. And they're like, who are you? She's like, my name's Dorothy Bear. I have 4 kids with Richard Overton. I'm his ex. And back in the early 70s, I started getting really sick after I asked for a divorce. What happened was I found out that while we were married, he secretly married a different woman named Carolyn Draper that he had a secret kid with. So that marriage got annulled eventually, but I found out I wanted a divorce. Then I started getting sick all the time and he was trying to kill me. I can tell you, like, he was definitely trying to poison me. I had nausea. I had lesions. I had peeling feet. She's listing these things that sound like things that Janet had gone to the hospital for. Dorothy confronts Richard and says, I know that you're trying to poison me. I know that you're putting poison in my food, in my shampoo, in my coffee. You're putting selenium in them. I got them, like, I know that you're doing it. And he's like, yeah. He admits it. What's crazy is she's telling the cops he admitted that he was poisoning me, but I didn't push for the prosecution. I just wanted the divorce. I just wanted to be done. So maybe she's scared of him. I don't know what that story is, but I think it's wild that she's like, he definitely was poisoning me because he was mad. I found out. And I didn't do anything. And now he's married to this other woman that died. Once she describes all this poisoning stuff, they're able to call the coroner and be like, you got to go back and check out that body. And so they go and they examine Janet's stomach contents. And as soon as they do that, they're like, oh, they smell cyanide right away. And they're like, cyanide would never be in your body to a degree where we could smell it. That means there's a ton of cyanide. So they're like, okay, let's test the tissue again. Let's test the blood. Yes, she definitely died of cyanide poisoning. And how would he get cyanide is the next question. And they look into that and they realize that Richard Overton has a business partner that does gold mining. And he has an office Richard has a key to. And if you went in there, there would be all this kind of material, including cyanide that relates to gold mining. So he did for sure have access to it. He gets arrested in 1991 and they look at his diaries when they go to court. And first of all, his diaries are so weird. They talk about measuring his body temperature, his weight. They talk about his poops. I don't know what's wrong with this guy.
I mean, he's a murderer.
But like, why is he writing about his own shits? He writes about her as well, a bunch in it. And he writes in Spanish and in Russian to try to hide what he's writing. It's like, dude, you're not the only. Those aren't your secret languages you made up, bro. He lists 17 men that he thinks she's having affairs with. And he lists all her activities, like going into a hotel. He's following her all the time, watching her all the time, and writing stuff down all the time. And he's alluding in these diaries to the idea that he is poisoning her. They do a bunch of lab analyses of all kinds of things in the house. And what they find out is that his original thing was, I'm going to poison her with selenium, which is what he was using on his first wife. And the way that he does it is he's putting it in a bunch of stuff to try to get it to seep into her body. He puts it in her mascara and her eyeliner. So like when she's putting on her cosmetics, she's a little bit poisoning herself every single day.
Oh my God.
And absorbing it. but it's not enough. God. Like, she's getting sick, but she's not dying. She's getting lesions. All these bad things are happening, but she's still alive. So what they believe happened was day of, he was like, fuck it, and dumped a bunch of cyanide in her coffee. Let's get this thing over with. It's taking too long because it's not the selenium, it's cyanide, and it's a big dose that finally does it.
How do they not trace the cyanide in the initial cause of death? Wouldn't they test for toxicology reports?
I don't know. I think she just dropped dead and she had such a history of illness that toxicology reports didn't. Take a really long time unless you know what you're looking for. It's almost That's like true. DNA and you're not in CODIS. Yeah. It's like they don't test for everything when somebody dies. They try to figure it out with some sort of reasoning behind it. So when this woman gives them an idea of what could have killed her, they're able to quickly be like, you're right, that's it.
Jesus
Christ. Is so scary. He maintains his innocence till the day he dies. And his lawyers say, the cyanide found in her system was low. It could have been a byproduct of her ulcer meds. And they're like, no, it wasn't low. It was really high and somebody killed her. And when an interview of him talking about his trial, he said, I kept thinking, let's leave this silly play and go home. It took a long time to realize it was real because the whole thing has been so theatrical. And you're like, easy, PhD, like, relax. You're not above a murder trial because you're a fucking killer. He ends up dying of advanced dementia and complications from diabetes at a hospice in Northern California. He had been given a life sentence, so he was going to serve the rest of his days there, but he dies at 81 years old, and that means that he got 35 more years of life on this planet than Janet did. And Eric is rightfully pissed and is like, wow, that you're my dad? You took the person that I love the most away from me. And he was eventually like a person that was able to say to the police, yes, I do think my father did this. He didn't hold on to the idea that it wasn't.
Right.
Yeah. Ugh. And that's that story.
I mean, I think I would have predicted it was him before the source of the murderer next to me. What was the title of the show you watched?
Huh?
What was the title of the show you watched about this?
The Killer Beside Me, I think. Or
The Killer Beside Me. So I knew it was going to be him from that. But as soon as you started, I was like, he's making flyers. Like, what busybody at the PTA such is making a busybody flyers for some stranger? Like, that's the other thing that's so crazy.
Also, I just don't understand these people that are unwilling to get a divorce. And they'd rather get a hobby where they're putting little trace amounts of poison in somebody's mascara. It's so above and beyond. I'm like, you know, if you just got a divorce, you could use all that time to get good at racquetball or something. What are you doing?
The other thing that makes me really angry, I mean, all of this story makes me angry, but what pisses me off is that you're thinking like, both of his wives had affairs on him and that's why he was getting back at them. And the answer is no. He got married to another woman while he was married to his first wife and had another child. Like, this person was doing crazy shit.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he still attacked these women because his own ego couldn't handle them wanting to leave. God, that's so fucked. That's so fucked.
Yeah.
I really hate it. I hate him and I hate that. I hate it.
Yeah. It's a really dark story. And just, it was another one of the, he reminded me a little bit of that story that we told for Crime of a Lifetime about the man selenium. That poisoned his neighbor with the Coke. And
yeah, same.
It
That's
reminded me of him because it was also a case where it was of a man that I feel he did poison because he's a coward. He did it because he wanted to slowly watch and feel like a god. He did it because he felt superior because he was this PhD. It just struck me as very similar. A person that decides they're above it and that has the ego to assume that they won't be caught. And then when you look into their past, just like you did this guy, you of course saw
a pattern,
the steps, the patterns, the I've done this to some degree in the past and gotten away with it. And I will continue to do whatever makes my life cleanest and not feel a thing.
It blows my mind too. I think my heart goes out to his first wife who just wanted out. And
so
she was
badly.
Being poisoned, and she was out so badly that she was like, I don't even want to deal with
She's
it anymore.
Like, forget
I just
want to,
cut
I
you
just
out
want
of
to
my
be
life.
Away
forget
from
it.
You.
But I am so glad she heard something and stood up and said something, because he would have gotten away with it again, I think, if she didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That I hate that. I hate that story, and I feel like I should stay single.
I don't think it's a bad idea.
All right, well, I have to go to an accounting meeting, and I'm
some
accounting
accounts.
On you.
Go be accountable for your accounting meeting.
Okay, I'll be accountable. Ben Affleck, here we go.
Here we go, baby.